Clayton Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Let's keep the college athletics, college football, and more talk going right now. We're joined by John Talty from AL.com. John, how in the world are you doing, man? It's nothing going on in Tennessee. Appreciate you joining us in this quiet time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It's you feel like it's going to be quiet, and then something big happens. And so here we are again with some big news today of Tennessee hiring a new AD.
Well, and let's talk real quickly about Danny White. Wanted to get your thoughts on that. A lot of people thought they might stay within the family. They go outside the family. So let's start with that since it's breaking news. Your thoughts on Danny White joining the University of Tennessee as director of athletics?
Yeah, I think this is a big hire for Tennessee. I think it's already been, I think well received by people in the college athletics world. He was already making, one of the highest paid salaries in college athletics as an AD. And so, Tennessee, I think, made a pretty big commitment to him. And I've been told, I think it'll come out tomorrow, a long-term contract for Danny White at Tennessee. And I think that was part of the reason why he was willing to leave what was a very good situation at Central Florida to come to Tennessee. So I think there was a lot of early names kind of mentioned, including some that had ties, to Tennessee. But, they're going outside the family. And I think, honestly, it could be a good thing for Tennessee because, they've done things kind of one way for a while, and obviously it hasn't worked because they're in the position they are in right now. And Danny White's someone who's had success both at Buffalo, making a bunch of key hires there, and then at Central Florida with the success they've had, specifically in football.
We all wondered what might be the fate of Kevin Steele, and because of how fast this AD search turned around, probably tells us they're going to hire a coach outside of the program. But you had written an article, and I read every word of it. I actually went back and read most of it again. You wrote an article, is Kevin Steele a bystander or an opportunist? Because he'd essentially been the coach of two SEC teams over the span of 19 days at one point. So I'll ask you, what is it, or is it maybe a mix of both?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a little bit of a mix of both, but I lean more into the opportunist side of things. I think certainly there was a lot of smoke, and not to, go too down a digression here, but, with Auburn, there was a very heavy push amongst influential boosters to hire him for that job. At a minimum, he was aware of some of those boosters trying to push out Gus Malzahn and insert him into that head coach position. They ended up getting Gus fired, but weren't successful in being able to make Kevin Steele the next head coach. So he's looking for a new job, and he takes a job at Tennessee, in which initially he's hired in a very vague way, as a defensive assistant, despite the fact that they already had a defensive coordinator. He's given a 2-year contract despite, reports out there that there was a hiring freeze and they couldn't bring anybody on. And, Tennessee tried to spin it on Monday as if, he didn't know what exactly was, going to happen, didn't know he was going to be the acting head coach. But I was told not long after Pruitt was fired, Kevin Steele gave a prepared speech, to different coaches and coaches on staff. And from what I heard, it wasn't something he just came up with off the cuff. He knew he was going to be the acting head coach. So when you add up all those different things, there's at least a belief that, he's kind of involved in some of these different things. Whether he's the mastermind, I don't quite believe that, but certainly, had some a role in these different things. And, I think before Danny White got hired, there were a lot of people within the college football world that did think he was probably going to be a bridge hire for a year or so and probably get a chance to coach in the team in 2021. I do think White's hire changes that a bit.
How close do you think did Kevin Steele get to becoming the head coach at Auburn?
I mean, there was a time where people absolutely believed it was happening, and he had the support of some very influential people who give a lot of money to the university. And so, they wanted to fire Gus and quickly promote Kevin Steele to that position. I mean, there was a hope because that happened just a couple of days before the early signing period on that Wednesday. And so the hope was that he was going to be in place, within 48 hours of firing Gus, and that they could then, use that as kind of a way to keep together the recruiting class and maybe even add a couple kids. Obviously that didn't happen. And I think a key part of that was that Auburn's AD, Alan Green, was very committed to wanting to do a national search. He was able to convince the Auburn president to go that path rather than just listening to some of these different boosters. And so they put together a search committee. They hired a search firm, which actually happened to be the same one that Tennessee just used for its AD search. And once that happened, it slowed down the process and allowed, you know, Auburn to look at other candidates beyond Kevin Steele. And I think, you know, the longer it went on, the less and less it looked like Steele was going to be the guy. And, you know, ultimately they hired Brian Harsin from Boise State. But I think especially within that first, you know, 48-hour period of firing Gus, there was a lot of belief that Kevin was going to be the guy. And ultimately, you know, those powerful boosters lost out.
On with John Talty from AL.com, talking college football and college athletics with Blaine and Mickey.
Well, John, thanks for coming on. I guess when the Auburn search started, did you think they would end up at Brian Harsin? I mean, how far were you from that?
No, I don't think anybody really thought that. Certainly was not a name that you heard mentioned early on in that search. There was a lot of other ones. You know, so you had some of your kind of obvious names that got thrown out there, you know, Hugh Freeze being one of them. But I don't think Harsin was a guy that, you know, there weren't a lot of natural connections to Auburn. You know, he's a guy who has spent almost all of his career at Boise State. The only kind of weird little connection really is just that he was the guy who replaced Gus Malzahn at Arkansas State when Gus left for Auburn. So you had this weird connection of him now replacing Gus at two different jobs. But, you know, I don't think anybody really pinpointed him as one of the main guys. But I do think, you know, he evidently had a relationship with Auburn's AD, Allen Green. And so I think he was a name on, you know, Allen's list, but not a name that I think was got any early buzz and not one of the early names that people thought Auburn was going to target.
Man, well, we've seen the power that be of Alabama, man, even during the COVID. But one thing that stays consistent is Saban. With all the turnover on his coaching staff year in and year out, man, it's not really to ask, I guess, how great he is, but more ask how far is he removing himself as the GOAT and even passing Bear Bryant.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear at this point that he is the greatest, you know, for, you know, like some of the reasons you just hit on there. You know, the game has obviously changed a lot since, you know, when Bear was winning, and that's not to in any way take away what Coach Bryant did, but, you know, Nick being able to, A, do it, win championships at two different schools, but also just, you know, the way he's evolved his program multiple times now. You know, you look at how he won national championships early on in his tenure at Alabama, the type of offense that played, type of defense they played, and you look at kind of what they just did against Ohio State, and it's just completely different. And he's been, I think, very good at, A, never letting success stop him. He's never been content getting to the mountaintop. He wants to stay there. And you've seen other programs, you know, they almost have kind of that, you know, that championship hangover where the next year they're just not able to kind of get up the way they were the past year. You really haven't seen that happen at Alabama. And I think every time he loses an assistant, he uses it as an opportunity to evaluate what is and isn't working and try to bring in people that can maybe add something that they haven't had before. And you look at just this past year, they lose Steve Sarkisian, who was, you know, the best assistant coach in America, lose Kyle Flood, who was someone who was very highly regarded, you know, led what was the nation's best offensive line. And he replaces them with two guys who are NFL head coaches this past season, and Bill O'Brien and Doug Marrone. And so he's been very good at finding quality replacements to continue his, you know, program going forward. And so I think he's, you know, part of what's been an unbelievable run. And even though he is 69 years old now, I mean, really just doesn't show many signs of slowing down. I mean, he's still recruiting at an incredibly high level. In fact, just signed what people believe to be his best recruiting class ever at Alabama.
Mm. One thing that he has never done there, John, is hire someone who potentially have show cause. But once that over, do you think Saban then will let him be in coaching rehab under the Saban tree?
I could certainly see that, you know, and I put something out a couple of days ago that, you know, Pruitt has even told people over the last couple of years that, you know, if he were ever to get fired at Tennessee, he would just go back to Alabama to work under Saban again. I do think there's a high level of respect between those two guys. And, you know, there's some people within Alabama that think Pruitt is the best defensive coordinator Saban has had during his time in Tuscaloosa. But like you hit on there, a key factor is going to be, does he have a show cause? And, yeah, you know, now clearly setting up to be a legal battle between Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt. What all comes out from that, and how much of it sticks to Jeremy Pruitt? You know, if there's a lot of these different allegations that can directly tie back to Jeremy Pruitt, even if he hasn't gotten a show cause penalty, I still think it'd be very difficult for any SEC school, including Alabama, to hire him during that time frame. So I think he's someone who, on paper alone, would be a very attractive candidate for Alabama to one day hire. Could be, you know, when defensive coordinator Pete Golding goes somewhere else. But if there's a lot of things swirling around Pruitt, and of course, if he ends up getting a show cause penalty, that's going to severely diminish his opportunities, including at Alabama.
We're on with John Talty, AL.com. I got to ask you one more question. It's more a fun question, John, but and that is this the best Alabama team of all time? You've covered them. Who would you match them up against, and who would win?
You know, I think after the game, I certainly felt that it was the best ever. You know, I think it's, as you guys probably know, it's so hard, I think, to compare different eras just because of how much the game has changed. You know, it's hard for me to compare a 2020 Alabama team to some of the early title teams of Bryant. I mean, the game is just completely different. The way they recruit is completely different. There's all these different factors that make it tough. But I think if you look at within Nick Saban's time at Alabama, I think this is certainly one of, if not the best title team that he's had. I think you can look at the other you know, undefeated team he had as one of the other possibilities. I even think, you know, even though they ended up losing to Clemson in 2016 down in Tampa, I thought that was one of his best teams. And I think, you know, was probably his best defense in many ways that he had at Alabama, just given all the guys who went on to go to the NFL. But I think, you know, fully admitting there's some recency bias here, I do think this is the best championship team that Saban has had at Alabama.
Well, with John Talty of AL.com.
John, so we all have been throwing darts against the board trying to figure out who UT's next AD and head coach might be. Obviously, the AD thing got answered extremely quickly. So now we look at the coach. And I was actually at Arkansas State. I work with Gus Malzahn, and I work with Brian Harsin in one of my other lives. So I know both of those guys pretty well. Somebody asked me about Gus at UT, and I said, I don't know if you could find, you know, a more stable human being. He's just all about coaching football. And then we all start to look, well, Kevin Steele's already on the staff. Could you see Gus and Kevin Steele working together again in any capacity?
It's hard for me to believe that would be the case. And I'll tell you guys, you know, I had heard, you know, I want to say even a couple weeks back, maybe even, you know, a month back, that, you know, keep an eye on Gus in Tennessee as a possibility. And that was, you know, before, certainly way before Pruitt got fired. I think there's two things to think about this is, A, you know, is Gus ready to take on another job? You know, I think if this job was open a year from now, it would make more sense for him. I think right now the timing's up. I mean, he just got fired. He is collecting a massive buyout. I think he's probably, you know, like any former coach, I think he might get a little antsy, but does he want to jump into such another high profile job, which again, a lot of your success is dependent on, can you beat Alabama? He's already been through that once. Does he want to do it from that job, given the NCAA violations that Tennessee has admitted have occurred? I don't know if that's quite the best fit for him in this moment. But to answer your other question, you know, this was a strained relationship by the end, very much a situation in which Gus was the head coach of offense, Kevin Steele was the head coach of defense. Wasn't a ton of, I think, communication and trust between those two guys. And so, and I think that, you know, people believe that Rodney Garner is going to potentially join that Tennessee staff too. And if that's the case, you know, that's another guy kind of in the Steel camp and not the Gus camp. It's hard for me to believe he would want to take that job unless he was given assurances you can hire whoever you want and it doesn't have to include Kevin Steele.
So, you cover the SEC. Obviously, you're covering it through the lens of AL.com, so you're not in Knoxville every day or Nashville, but you are covering the league every day. What is Tennessee selling right now to potential head coaching candidates? Like, what's the allure at Tennessee right now?
Well, I mean, I think that's going to be certainly the biggest task that Danny White is going to have to, you know, do going forward. And I think any coach who's potentially interested in this job, given the press conference that everybody's aware of on Monday, is going to want to know, what am I walking into? What potential violations am I walking into? Am I going to have to deal with a bowl ban right off the bat? So Danny White's going to have to assure people that this is an okay situation to walk into. And I would not be surprised, kind of like, again, I was told Danny White to get a long-term deal. If they decide to have a true national search this year, which I think people believe with Danny, they're probably going to have to give someone a pretty long deal to come on board. You know, I don't think you're going to attract a very high-level candidate with a five-year deal, just because you probably know, you know, a year or two of that could be rough going, just based on what we know of the transfer portal and all the guys leaving, and again, possible NCAA violations coming down the pike. So I think for them, it's showing an opportunity to rebuild the program in your life. I think you're knowing that with Danny White, he's going to give you the support that you need to do it the right way. I think probably clearing out some of the people who have interfered in the past is something that they can be sold. And I think people, I mean, it's still a brand name program. I think people still have respect for Tennessee, even though, you know, that championship feels further and further in the rearview mirror. I still think you can sell it as a brand to someone. And you know that if you are able to have success, you're going to be very highly regarded, not only in Tennessee, but around the country for being able to finally fix what has plagued, you know, numerous coaches in the last, you know, five or so coaching hires for Tennessee. So I think there is a lot to sell. It's just all about how you package it. And you're going to have to calm concerns about possible NCAA violations for anybody who's potentially interested in that job.
Well, speaking of coming to Tennessee, a guy that you covered at Auburn was Big Cat Bryant, and he was coming to Tennessee, and then, boy, life comes at you fast, really fast in his case. Have you seen him, like, driving around the interstates of Alabama or something, just trying to figure out which direction to point his car in?
I think Big Cat's gone under the radar. But, yeah, I mean, the expectation was that, that he was going to end up in Tennessee. Obviously, he publicly announced it. And, again, you know, he has a close relationship with Rodney Garner and, you know, his position coach at Auburn. And from what I'd heard was that, you know, that might have even played a role in him wanting to go to Tennessee, because he expected Garner to be the defensive line coach at Tennessee. And so, you know, whether that does that mean Garner's not going to be the guy anymore? Obviously, there's a lot that's changing pretty much hourly in Knoxville right now. And so I don't think it's, you know, nothing that I've heard indicates Big Cat definitely won't go to Tennessee anymore, but he might just be waiting to see, all right, who's going to be the next head coach? Is Kevin Steele still going to be there? And other possible, you know, personnel changes that could occur, you know, in the next couple weeks.
All right, I wanted to hit you with this one more just on the way out. John Talty, our guest. How do you think Urban Meyer's going to do in Jacksonville? You've covered college football. You know him like we all do as a college football guy. He's going to stick his toe in the very hot water of the NFL. How do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly probably the question people are most interested in with the NFL right now, right? And so, you know, we've seen some guys have success in the transition to NFL. We've seen some very famous ones that have it. You know, I'll just relate it back to, I think, Nick Saban, and that, you know, Saban, we were just saying, is the greatest coach of all time. And I don't think he was an outright failure in the NFL, but certainly wasn't as successful as, you know, people maybe expected or compared to what he's done in the college game. And I think there's a lot of similarities between Urban and Nick in one particular area, and that is both guys are just absolute relentless recruiters. I think both of them, especially when they're both in the SEC, pushed, you know, the limits as much as possible. They basically had to change rules to prevent them from doing certain things just because they were willing to put in the hours and travel more than other head coaches, I think, wanted to. And so Meyer is losing, I think, one of his biggest advantages, in that he is just an incredible recruiter. The positive is that, you know, he's getting the number one pick. He's probably about to get Trevor Lawrence, and it seems like they're well set up in terms of cap room and other draft picks down the line to try to bring in some high-level talent. But I think that is one of the biggest challenges transitioning from college, in which you get to pick the top players in many ways, especially when you have a program rolling like Ohio State or Florida the way he did. And now you're going to a situation where, you know, no offense to anybody from Jacksonville listening to the show, but I mean, Jacksonville is not the sexiest place to sell, not the way that Florida or Ohio State was in college. And so he's going to deal with challenges he's never had to deal with, and I'm really fascinated whether he can overcome some of the natural limitations that come with coaching the Jaguars.
John, thank you for the time, man. Appreciate you jumping on with us today. AL.com, always tons of great stuff there, and always enjoy reading your everything that you put out, man. Always great stuff.
Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate you.